At Monday's town hall in the Portland building, members of Rosenbaum & Associates, the Chicago firm that makes up the bulk of the COCL, heard from a small but vocal audience of community members. Founder Dennis Rosenbaum explained the COCL's role in the settlement process.
I don't want to speak for DOJ. In the end, we're really advisory to DOJ in the sense that our, and to the city, because they are the official monitor. It's a very strange relationship, but in the end, their opinion counts more than ours, I think. But they do listen to us. Getting
strangely.
Yeah. But we do a little more field work and stuff, and we think about it differently. They have a more legal perspective. We have more of a social science perspective.
Despite the COCL's lack of real power, it is the public's most readily available window into the workings of police reform, and in many ways, into the police bureau itself as it currently functions. The latest report is at times sharply critical of the bureau, in particular when it comes to training and de-escalation. In this clip, KABU reporter Jasmine Moneymaker asks Rosenbaum about their criticisms of the bureau's de-escalation training, and Rosenbaum gives some background on the debate.
On the subject of de-escalation training, I'm a little bit surprised by your answers, because one of the main themes I got throughout the report was that you all seem clearly very aware that there's a big problem, not only in the way that de-escalation is approached by the Portland Police Bureau, but also the way that it's trained, and then going all the way up through the chain of command, there's real problems with accountability on the way force is used, and especially de-escalation force. On page 19, you say, "We continue to have concern with PPB's interpretation, training, and review criteria for the term de-escalation, and believe the interpretation prevents PPB from complying with 67A and other areas of the settlement agreement." That is a very serious thing to write. But then in this discussion, it seems like that's something that is worth mentioning in a conversation about de-escalation and accountability and the effect of force policing on our community.
Nobody's intending to do anything harmful here. It's just a matter of how you look at the definition of de-escalation. And it's also kind of a national debate, to be honest. The Police Executive Research Forum put out a report that was like 30 principles on dealing with force, and they really pushed the envelope, saying we should be going way beyond the Graham standard. Police that are on the cutting edge should do more than that. The International Association of Chiefs of Police got up in arms and pushed back, wrote a report in 2017 saying we think that's going too far, and de-escalation is, the issue of how you define it is really important.
The issues that Rosenbaum was referring to are, as Jasmine said, much more clear-cut in the report, which we will link to on KABU's website. The two definitions of de-escalation can be boiled down to totality of circumstances versus moment in time. When an officer views an encounter with an eye for the totality of circumstances, de-escalation is occurring from the beginning of an encounter. The goal is to reduce the likelihood of a threat and encourage compliance from the subject without coercion. However, the definition preferred by the International Association of Chiefs of Police, as Rosenbaum mentioned, is moment in time, meaning that the use of de-escalation strategies only kicks in when an officer already feels threatened. And then, when their actions are reviewed by their supervisor, the supervisor only really considers what was going on in that moment in time, not in the entire encounter. In one section of the report, buried in Part 2 of Appendix 4, the COCL details and critiques a training session it attended. Throughout, the teacher undercut the importance of new policy directives on de-escalation and other reform measures. At one point, the instructor pulled up slides on procedural justice and police legitimacy, that is, the central necessity of public trust in police, and referred to them merely as, quote, "a warning that this is coming," from, quote, "our friends at the DOJ. The COCL described this as, quote, "dismaying." They also found the section on de-escalation to be far too short, treated dismissively by the instructor, and that in general many opportunities for discussion were passed over. The COCL listed some questions about how police ought to behave when de-escalating a scenario, that would benefit from subtle and open-minded discussion among trainees, discussion that did not happen. To quote the report, "With mental illness, officers were told to avoid or minimize the use of force, but how? Officers were told to intercede to prevent the unlawful use of force by another member, but how? What techniques? Other law enforcement agencies have devoted entire classes and full days to teach de-escalation, procedural justice, peer intervention, and related concepts that seek to eliminate the need for force or restrict the level of force required, yet the COCL has found it to be an uphill battle to get the PPB to treat these issues as important," end quote. Community member Kale Leuben, a longtime activist for police reform in Portland, summed up some of the community's frustrations with the results of this sort of training.
Salt Lake City apparently went for 22 months without shooting anybody. And they're saying that it's because of their de-escalation training. I just went over Portland's shooting list and discovered that of the five people shot in 2017, three white men survived and two black men did not survive.
Okay.
I'm a little stunned as to how I continue to speak to that subject. In Portland, it seems to be not a surprise that the dead guys die with their hands raised or not. We are talking life and death. As far as the community is concerned, we're talking life and death. We're not really talking disembodied statistics. We understand the scientific methodology and we understand trending and all of that. Mm-hmm. But the community faces problem solving at the soul level, the spiritual level, because when one person is killed, our community is diminished, and we feel it. It echoes year after year. We celebrate anniversaries of these passings. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering how it happens that Salt Lake City is doing de-escalation training. They are successful. Portland's doing de-escalation training. Less successful. Have we got an explanation, or is that solving for the next X?
Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch offered one simple solution for the endless arguments over the meaning of de-escalation.
The problem with this whole issue that we pointed out a number of times from Cop Watch is that the same word is used to mean two different things. They use de-escalation to mean when they use less force after already used it, and to mean not getting into an engagement with force in the first place.
Right.
I think you've got to use a different term. So the first one that I described, when you're already using force, that should be called like a mitigation of force or lessening of force or something like that, because it's not the same thing that we're talking about when we say de-escalation.
But the argument continues. Certainly, if the COCL report is accurate, the Bureau's actions express little interest in fully implementing de-escalation of the kind seen in Salt Lake City. The attitude is best summed up by the instructor at the training session viewed by the COCL, which quotes him as saying to the new recruits, "You get it." In other words, de-escalation is something you already do, so no need to discuss it here. For KBOO Evening News in Portland, I'm Sam Bowman.